Hi, I'm Ashley Easter, and welcome to the Courage Conversation Show. I am your host. I'm the founder and executive director of Courage 365, and we have a great show planned for you tonight. We have a special guest, Brannon Dempsey, and he is a male survivor who has really overcome a lot of challenging things, and he's here to share some tips and tricks with us. He's also an international speaker and an author. And I'm so excited to have him on the show. I'm going to read his bio in just a minute before welcoming him on. But if you're new here to the Courage Conversation Show, I just want to say welcome. And if you're not familiar with us and the work that we do, Courage 365 is our nonprofit. And we support abuse survivors of all different types with free resources and education. We also empower advocates and give them tools and resources as well. We welcome you here and are so glad that you're tuning in. Before we bring on Brannon to the show, let me read his bio really quickly so you can get a glimpse of what we're going to be talking about tonight. So Brannon Dempsey is an internationally known speaker and teacher. He can be seen on several platforms, including venues for live audiences, multiple social media formats, including a weekly podcast where he serves as a host for a multitude of guests. With his new book entitled Facing the Shadows, Brannon courageously tackles the sensitive topic of survival from childhood male sexual abuse. From the ages of 6 to 17, Brannon suffered trauma at the hand of an abuser, and now he is speaking out. He is sharing his story, and he is helping to empower other people with a message of freedom and healing. So without further ado, let's invite Brannon onto the show. Welcome, Brannon. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Ashley. Thank you so much for having me. Great to see you.
So good to see you. And I've really been looking forward to this conversation. We had a pre-chat a couple of weeks ago, and I was like, wow, we got to get this guy in the show.
Thank you for that. Glad to be here. It's a pleasure.
Yes. And Brannon, you have done a lot of different things. You have a lot of different occupations. You've written books. You've done a lot of speaking. But most recently, you have come out and started talking about some of your childhood abuse experiences. And without getting into all of the nitty-gritty details, because I know that can be a lot, could you just give us a quick overview of your backstory as a child, recognizing later as an adult that you'd experienced this, and how you came to acknowledge this challenging part of your life?
Sure. My journey began when I was 5 years old with a divorce of my parents. And as soon as after that happened, I moved in with my dad as my parents separated. And at the age of 6 was when I was sexually abused. And that, of course, changed my life forever. I did not feel safe. It was a traumatic experience that was repeated for many years throughout my life and at the hands of my family members. And that was involving my stepbrother, other peers and family members that were immediate family members. And then as I was abandoned by my parents and unable to share with them the trauma and the abuse that I had experienced. And what I did was something common that most people do. I buried that pain in thinking that, number one, how can I tell my parents when they're not only just absent from my life, but abandoning me? And would they believe me? I feel dirty and ashamed. And how would anyone love me? I can't love myself. And so growing up with that jaded outlook, it convinced me to believe that it was normal. It was normalized for me, the abuse. And I thought every young boy went through something like this. It may look different, but wasn't sure. And normalizing it myself throughout my life gave me another coping mechanism to relieve myself from that pain and acknowledging that since this must happen to everybody, it must not be that bad. And of course, it is really bad, but when you are a child and abuse is something that you encountered, no one prepares you for that. No one gives you a manual either of how to deal with the after of what occurs. At the same time, when we're being children, we don't process and have the conceptualization of an adult. So we can only rationalize from a childhood standpoint, which gives us very little to work from. So therefore, things like denying our pain and burying it and not talking about it becomes very simple, because those are the easy devices that we can anchor to that continue throughout all my life from junior high through high school and into college. Even when I met my wife, which was our junior year of high school, I was still in fear, very much in fear of anyone knowing about it. So that only enabled me to suppress those feelings and the realities of the abuse and the trauma. And then dealing with the trauma itself is another repeat of the abuse, because anyone that goes through a traumatic experience without dealing with the trauma itself is, in one way, it feels like another device of abuse besides the original event or episodes that have continued over years. So I had all that going on at one time, and I moved into my profession. I moved into a platform like this where I was teaching and speaking a lot, and I would continue to bury my pain, thinking that the more I just dive into my craft and in my career, the less and less I have to think about the abuse, and I don't have to deal with that abuse, or I don't have to face that responsibility, which I thought that I was accountable for, which of course you come to understand through therapy that it was not your responsibility. It's not your fault. But having gone through those many years of being re-abused by my own trauma made it very difficult for me to see that. And so I just continued the same of burying my pain and my past until one day in my 40s, in my early 40s, it caught up with me so quickly that I had definitely fallen into deep depression, but I became unrecognizable to my own mirror, not understanding who I was anymore, and had a very difficult time of even seeing another year of my life, even though I was already married and we have two beautiful boys. But I could not see anything but the trauma, and before I could go any further, I came to the point of my life where I had to stop everything and I had to get help, because keeping the pain buried was only burying me, and silencing that abuse was stealing my own voice, and it erupted into so much emotion and anger and rage that I no longer could fake it, basically. And that's what a lot of us do. And we become masters of our own playwrights and screenplays, trying to perceive our life as something different, when really deep down we know that we're actually running from the very abusers that have violated us. And I had, even just saying those words, you're putting labels on things which you're not taught to do from that abuse and going through that trauma. It's only through the help of therapy that we're able to put labels on events and peoples and faces. And so that took me, that took so much out of me, which that had to surface. And so even though I'd been through therapy throughout all my life, trying to deal with the divorce, I never once brought up the abuse. And that never was something I was going to touch. So honestly, it's taken me 40 years to begin to describe the events of what happened to me. And so that's where I am today. I'm finally telling my story. I'm embracing what happened to me because it is the truth. And therefore, because it is the truth, I have no need to run from it any longer. I have no need to lie. I have no need to live a double life to pretend that it did not happen. It is who I am, but it's not who I am. And those events have violated me, and from such a younger past. However, today they do not define me any longer.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that. I know that's really vulnerable. And I know even as you have written a book and you're speaking out about this, like, I just honor the fact that it is always hard to talk about our stories. No matter how many times we do it, there is a toll. And so thank you for that. It's so tragic. And I think there are so many stereotypes, and we've talked about this on the show as we've had other male survivors on. There's so many ideas about how abuse just happens to girls and women, but it really is something that can happen to anyone. And I'm just thinking about you as a little child, as a little boy, and then also knowing that as you have gone through your healing journey, grown up, and are now facing this, you also have boys. And I'm wondering, how do you have conversations with your children about safety and about acceptance of themselves and not hiding in shame when you yourself had a childhood where there was so much of that kind of inside of you for so long?
Sure. That's a really great thought process of how does one do that? And it's through the help of therapy that enables us to process events first before we can ever speak to our loved ones or family. And it's also very healthy at the right time and place when you feel safe and you feel the need then to discuss that with those that you love and that trust you and that you trust, which is very difficult to do. And now having to communicate that to my children, that was the first thing that my wife had asked me is that, Brandon, when your book comes out, they're going to read it. And my response was, I hope they do, because of the fact that there is so much that they need to know. And my job as a parent, no longer do I need to hide that part of my life. Because if I want my children to grow up and be safe, I need to teach them what the road signs are, the warning signs, and the events that I've gone through so that they don't learn that firsthand from somebody else, because that's how I learned it. And I want to help prevent that. So even at an early age when they were babies, we taught the simple principles of what, you know, safe touch is to a not safe touch, to someone who is safe, someone who is unsafe. And we would, at a young age, when they were babies, we would talk about that all the time to help firm that in their brain of what is a safe person, what is a safe touch, and what is not, because they're two very different things. And I never knew that there were I never knew that there was a difference. I thought they were one and the same. And now, which is interesting that you bring up that question, because on my walk this morning, I was talking to a dear friend who had actually helped spark me to write my book. And he asked about my kids. And it was so funny because I told him about a story of just recently, my oldest had asked me that just this past week. He said, Dad, I've known that you've always talked about safe touch and abuse. And he just looked at me, and he's 12, and he just said, did that happen to you? And I looked right at him, and that's the pivotal point of an abuse survivor is, do I tell them? What do I tell them? Should I not tell them? The answer is, you need to do what's best for you in that moment. There's no one way to describe how you should forecast an event and how you should operate. You have to do that based upon what your work has enabled you to do with the help of your therapist. So for me, I felt compelled to tell him, but that didn't mean that I had to describe all the events. So my answer to him was, yes, son, that did happen to me. But let's talk about that at a later time. For now, let me answer your question. And he just asked me, he continued, okay, then Dad, you've talked about this for a long time. Why is this important for me to know? And then I would explain to him, because number one, there's bad people. That's just simply it. There's bad people that we need to be protected from. Why is that so important? Let's talk about the why. Let's talk about the damaging effects of what it can do on a person. Because I went into just saying to him that, your skin is your boundary, and no one has the right to perpetrate or penetrate your boundary unless you allow them. And your body is yours, and what is private to you remains private. It is not to be shared or unlocked to anybody. And he honestly just got it right off the bat. And what I've come to understand through my own recovery is that we live our lives as abuse survivors. We live our lives in the metaphor as a zipper. Our zippers, the healthy zipper, should be on the inside, where only you have access to unzip or zip up parts of you that you feel safe. That's your control, that is within your power. But for those who have been abused, the zipper is faced on the outside, where it gives the perpetrator the access to get what they want. And the problem with us being abused is that when the perpetrator, the abuser, when they zip up our damage and our violation, the most incriminating thing that they do is that they put a padlock on top of that zipper. So then not only can we not unzip, but we're also locked down and we can't speak. And therefore, as children, our voices are stolen forever. And we live our lives through many years as older adults with that padlock, not knowing that all we have to do is have the help of someone professionally that can grab any key. And actually, there's no key at all. They can just simply unslip that lock. And in a healthy way, with the help of your therapist, you can together unzip and you can begin to heal those damaged parts that you never wanted to be visible to anyone. And that is, as a parent, no one should have a right over your body or over your child's body. And the more that we can protect our children to let them know the realities that this is your body and no one has a right to access what they want. It gives them power is what it does. It enables them to know that they have a choice, that they have a voice, and no one can steal and take that away from them.
That's such a apt analogy. And I love how you were able to have that raw and honest conversation with your son, and also that the relationship exists in a way that he could ask you questions and that he felt safe asking you something vulnerable like that.
Yes.
Which kind of brings me to another question. I know you've talked about this on your page and I've followed you for a bit. You talk about being a cycle breaker, and I can see even in that story how you're breaking the cycle because you didn't feel safe with your parents and you didn't feel like you could talk to them or ask them questions about things. What does it mean to you to be a cycle breaker, and how does somebody become one if they want to stop the cycle from repeating in future generations?
Yes, there is a book called Returning Home by the author, his last name Bradshaw, I believe, and it is a fantastic book. And I've come to understand what a cycle breaker is: a person who makes the choice to no longer continue that pattern of behavior. And the problem with child abuse is that when we are slain and we are violated, what trauma does to a person is that it convinces you that you are to keep it held down. And as I mentioned before about our adolescent and child brains, we don't have the capacity to think on adult terms. So therefore, what happens to the trauma is that the trauma doesn't have an outlet. And what happens is that trauma's got nowhere to go. It's got limited spaces to work within a child's parameter of their emotions and within their mindset. As an adult, you learn many different avenues of outlets. But when you still grow up as a child and thinking and still in that cyclic mentality, your trauma, even though you've learned all this all your life, going through school, through college, your jobs, whatever that you've done, you have all these different varieties of things that you know that you can do. But when that trauma grips you as a child, it stays there. And that limited capacity of brain work is still present. And actually what happens with trauma is that it's physiological. It's not just mental and emotional. People just don't understand that. But trauma actually changes the way that the brain is wired, and it rewires itself around certain areas so that it doesn't feel the pain anymore. And this is a lot to do in explanation why adults don't feel their trauma or they don't feel feelings, or they can't remember, because there's a narrow path that's blocked out those memories, either by choice, consciously or subconsciously. But the beautiful thing about therapy is that therapy has a way of helping the trauma be relieved, where now what was corrected course of our narrow path, they actually can reform themselves back in the way that they were intended. And the narrow part and nerves within your brain actually find their pathways back to where they were. And it's so amazing how our bodies are created and designed, because it's not forever that you're damaged. And as children, when we learn now that with the help of therapy, when we have different outlets, then we're allowed to voice that pain in different areas. Then, just like how the nervous system rebuilds itself, so can the voice rebuild itself and go out. And so, to answer your question, to be a cycle breaker means to break out of those cycles and the patterns of the way that we used to think. And it's by choice, but it's not, you just can't wake up one day either and just say, I'm going to break the cycle and the pattern and just be done with it and never think about it. That's just as bad as somebody burying their own trauma and abuse. So it's a process. What I talk a lot in my social platforms is that healing is a process, not an event. It is a long-term journey that you will forever be on. But the good news, here it is. The good news is that it will always be better. And here's what I've learned. That's the most powerful thing that helped me, is that you can change the end of your story. So when you become a cycle breaker, your life is no longer written in the way that it's supposed to be ended. You have that opportunity to change it in what you want it to be.
Wow. Wow. That's so powerful. And I think it's helpful for people to hear the psychology and the way our brain can be changed, and they have been changed, but how we can control the changes in the future with therapy and those kinds of things. I love how much you talk about therapy. And we are a huge proponent of therapy here at Courage 365. Right. We talk about it all the time. But one thing that I've seen a lot of is that men who have survived abuse tend not to go to therapy. And I will hear things like, oh, I don't like to talk about my feelings. And there's almost this connotation that's like a womanly thing. Or my therapy is going out and golfing and being alone by myself, or working out really hard. And they'll come up with a lot of different activities that they say they feel like replaces their therapy. I'm wondering talk to me about that.
Plain and simple. Talk to you about that?
Yeah. Talk to me about why you think men often talk about going to therapy and have other plans.
That's so awesome that you asked that. It's very simple. It's because it's not manly. But we're lied to as boys. That's the whole problem, is that we are taught at such a young age that it is not, boys don't cry. I made that post over this weekend that we were taught that boys don't cry. So that suggests that only girls cry. How discriminatory is that? You know, that's to say that women are always this way emotional and men are never. And then how can you reconcile the two? I mean, we're all human, no matter what. It's a lie when men say things like they can't talk about their feelings, but there's a lie in it. Let me back that up real quick. They're not lying when they say they can't talk about it. That is a true statement. They are right. They can't talk about it. But they convince themselves and others why they can't talk about it. Because I don't need to feel that. Because that's not manly. Because I'd rather golfing as my therapy. Or whatever the excuse it is. All that is an excuse of not to deal with their own trauma. And that's scary, because what the man is telling you, or woman, when they say, I don't want to touch it, they're telling the truth. But what's scary about it is that the number of excuses that they come up with is because it comes from a place of burying that trauma. And they've gone so deep And they've been so hurt for all these years. That's how I felt. I felt that there was no way out. And I felt like people just kept pouring dirt on top of me, more dirt and more dirt within my own grave. And I could not get out of it. And I felt so worthless and so inhuman that how could anyone love me the way that I'm intended to be? Because we feel so unloved, but we're also unlovable by other people that we think are safe, or that we think are safe in the church and they're not. And this took me years and years to realize that the true people who really love me are the ones who are right with me. That is my wife. That is my children. That is my therapist. That is the healing moments that I was to make relational bridges with my mom. Within my story that I haven't told you is that I wasn't able to make that relational bridge with my father because he had died. My dad died before I was able to tell him my abuse. My abuser, who was my stepbrother, also died way long ago when I was in high school. I had other abusers in my life as well that they died too. And to this day, I don't think there is no one physically, there is no one on earth any longer that have physically abused me that's still alive today. So I still live with the enablers of my mind and enablers that have still lived within this world. Same family members, the same thing. But I just find it incredibly important to talk about your pain and to talk about your trauma, because deep down there is someone who loves you so deeply than what you ever realize. And they don't want you to go through life living in that casket or living in that grave, because you are intended to be so much more than your abuse and so much more than your pain, more than what you can ever think of yourself. And so you have to understand that your life is no longer about you. Your life is about other people, for other people who want to be loved by you, and that you can look at yourself and you can be loved again in the right way, in the way that it's intended, again, because your story is not finished.
Yes. And having gone through so much pain and having seen the darkness, and as you described, feeling like you were being buried, how do you go about finding beauty again in life? How do you go about opening yourself back up to that?
That's actually my second book. The first book that we're with the editor right now is Facing the Shadows, and it's not even out yet. But the second book, already I've named it After the Shadows. And that right there describes how I got through it. I'm often asked, how did you get through the abuse? How did you get through all those years? I don't know how, honestly. But I do know this, that when I was in those episodes, I just kept remembering, this is not my end. This is not going to be my end. And I'm going to survive. And I don't know how, and I don't know what I'm doing, but this is not my end. And that's what I say today, as I still work through the layers of abuse and trauma. How do I keep moving forward is to continue to remind myself, this is not the end. There's something powerful in saying that, because it puts you in that posture to walk and to learn how to take a step all over again. It's not about sitting back and letting the trauma do it at once with you and to zip up and zip down anything that had that access that's out of your control. You have a choice. You don't have to allow that any longer. So I have to keep in front of me what keeps me moving forward. I have to keep in front of me that my life means something to other people. My life means something to my wife. It means something to my boys. It means something to my mom. It means something to my close friends, that I have to keep going because of them. It's not because of me anymore. I've had to agree that I needed to be healed. I had to agree that I no longer choose to live in this darkness. I have to agree that my story can continue and that it has to change from here. And I have to believe that.
Wow. Huh. You've had such a courageous journey and coming out on the other side and then sharing your wisdom and your learnings with other people is so brave. And we're so honored that you would share that. And I just want to finish the interview by asking you a question we ask all of our guests. And that is, what does courage mean to you?
Courage means stepping out of the place of who you are, what's comfortable, and allowing yourself to be transparent and vulnerable. And I want to thank you for bringing me on today, because I will tell you, this is my first video interview to share my story. I shared on radio before, but this is my first video. And a person can say, how do you do that? What you're asking, how do you have courage? How do you take a step out? It's learning then to agree with your vulnerability. That it's learning to agree with, not agreeing with the abuse and the violation that happened, but agreeing that it did happen and no longer being afraid of it happening, but just to say, yes, it did happen. What do you have to lose? That's what I ask myself, is what do I have to lose by telling my story? Because it may make somebody uncomfortable. That's not the purpose of why I'm telling my story. My purpose is to tell my story, is to get out that pain like a wound. And the wound has to bleed. You can't just siphon it, and it can never do the job of what it's supposed to do to discard and discharge the ugliness of it for the purpose of that wound to heal and to become something beautiful. That is our purpose of stepping out in courage.
So good. So good. And you mentioned that you have a book that's coming out soon. And I know that you talk about a lot of these things on your social media. After hearing this interview, I know our audience is going to want to follow you. So tell them where they can get all the things and be updated when your book is released.
Thank you. You can find me on Facing the Shadows on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And some people may already know me from what I do with Confessions of a Worship Leader, which is also found on those same social platforms, and also Worship Team Training, which is geared towards helping others within the church. But my story is something that I know is given to me for the purpose to help others. And so I welcome you to follow me on Facing the Shadows and anywhere else. And Ashley, thank you for having me here on your show today. And thank you to your followers.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate your courage and your willingness to share. I know everybody's going to want to take a look at your social media and see when your book comes out. Thank you so much. And everybody, after you're done following Brandon's social media, checking out all those things, please go ahead and follow Courage 365. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube, all the places. We also have a website, courage365.org. And if you're in a crisis situation, we have the Need Help tab that has a lot of different hotlines, as well as resources for different types of abuse you may have experienced. And then on our website, we also have a bunch of free resources, like how to find a therapist. We talked about that today, how powerful therapy can be. But if you're not sure how to find a therapist, or it seems unaffordable to you, there's a free How to Find a Therapist resource. It's a training and ebook with lots of tips and tools, along with a variety of other things. But one of my very favorite resources that we offer for free is our text message list. These text messages are written by survivors for survivors. And a couple weeks ago, Brandon actually helped contribute to this list. And he created a bunch of really powerful text messages that we sent out. And we often have survivors contribute to this list so people can sign up for it for free. And in the morning, they get this courageous text message that really helps them keep going throughout the day. And all you have to do to sign up is text the word courage to the number on the screen, which is 917-809-7311. That's text the word courage to 917-809-7311. And when you do that, you'll automatically be added to the text message list. We don't spam you. We don't share your number with other people. It's just for you to get inspiring messages Monday through Friday from survivors just like you. Thank you all so much for tuning in. We hope that you'll give this a share because we know that there's people on your social media feed that need this. Even if you don't know exactly who they are, sharing this could help somebody who maybe hasn't even had the courage or the ability to talk about what they've gone through. So we'd request that you would share this around with your friends. And again, we thank you for listening. And as always, live with courage.